It's the thing that makes us human, and the thing that makes change in our world, creativity. In science, it's about innovation and design. In culture, it doesn't connect the dots in as obvious ways. If you're a creative, as they say in the marketing industry, you possess a talent that determines the direction of a project, a trend, or a cycle. You tap into the zeitgeist in a different way. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and we're talking about our greatest asset, creativity. All of science's most important inventions were inevitable. Someone was going to invent the wheel, or the printing press, the telephone, or the electric car. And often, the person who gets credit or is remembered for it was just the one who got to the patent office or the finish line first. So that part of innovation, getting notoriety, isn't about creativity. We're talking about the special and sometimes naive ability we possess as creatives. When we take creativity to the lowest common denominator, its simplest form, you could ask a person to find a connection between a set of words. Danny Kahneman describes this in his revolutionary book, Thinking Fast and Slow. The job of the creatives in the TV show Mad Men was to come up with an idea for an ad. The process involved absorbing the context of everything that surrounds us and coming up with something catchy.
And Teddy told me the most important idea in advertising is new. It creates an itch. You simply put your product in there as a kind of calamine lotion. But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product. Nostalgia. It's delicate, but potent. This device isn't a spaceship. It's a time machine.
Don Draper says, it's not a projector, it's a time machine. Or at the end of the series, it's the real thing. A jingle, a song, a poster, a book cover, a commercial.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Composers do this too. They take the works of their contemporaries and build on them. They were commentators on each other's music, and the very best composers are part of a timeline. They often quote each other, and they certainly mimicked each other. There were styles, there were trends, there's what's catchy, what's in, what's out. Stravinsky was outspoken that he disliked the 12-tone method that Schoenberg invented. But then when Schoenberg died, he started writing 12-tone music, as if it couldn't be dismissed after all. Max Berry wrote a fictional novel called Syrup, and it's about the Coca-Cola marketing department. The creative characters are always having their work stolen by the savvy executives and marketers. They admit outright that they can't create an ad. It's a sad but true statement about artists. Most of them don't know how to realize the money-making potential of ideas. And ideas are what drives the marketing. Without them, the company would never have become the multi-billion dollar company it is today. Now we're well into the third millennium, and scientists are parsing the border between men's intellectual abilities and those of robots. Where is the line between us? So many jobs have been delegated to computers. We no longer need elevator operators, toll booth operators, or telephone operators. All of these jobs are long gone. So now food store checkouts and bank tellers, the list just gets longer and longer. And scientists are figuring out exactly what abilities it takes to do jobs that were once for humans. Let's take the driverless car. And we've already seen that cars can drive themselves. They solve all the problems that we do as humans, and maybe doing it better. But there's a snag. In a hybrid society of human and non-human drivers, the chaos increases. In other words, they can't anticipate bad driving. A live driver might stop for illogical reasons, and this can send the AI driver into a proverbial tailspin as it tries to figure out the bad driving. So the conclusion thus far is driverless cars can only outperform human drivers if all the cars are driverless. So let's turn away from something as mundane as traffic and look at something really cultural like a symphony orchestra. What would be the purpose of having a computer mimic all the sounds that a symphony orchestra makes? They could certainly be more perfect. But what would be the point? Maybe computer-generated orchestra music could be used for film and TV, and maybe it could be better. But then there's live music, following a soloist for one, watching a live performance, changing tempos with finesse, making compelling artistic choices and dynamics. Voices could never be imitated, and everything else that connects the human mind to art. The list continues. So here's a fun exercise, and let's jump into the future a little bit so we can suspend our disbelief. Imagine a member of the orchestra were AI. The technology would be advanced enough that the robot could learn from his surroundings. Like a driverless car, he would incorporate human actions surrounding his own actions. Okay, it could be a stretch, but possible. He would be imitating his less perfect stand partners and orchestral cohorts. He'd have to be programmed to take some initiative, interpreting commands from the podium, matching the playing of his section mates. Much of this is already within AI capability. In art, a program called Vincent is a drawing program that takes basic pen strokes and makes your work imitate great masters. The computer is given a range of creativity that's somewhere between computer and human.
Will artificial intelligence aid artists in the future? Or will they replace artists?
Somewhere in between, whereby technology or augmented intelligence is used to collaborate with artists to make art.
Good. All we need is a platform.
A music composition program was developed by several composers. Here's Pierre Barraud talking about it on CuriosityStream's Becoming Human.
AI is going beyond visual art. This piece of music was created with the help of an AI composer called Ivor.
Ivor is an artificial intelligence that has been taught music composition by reading essentially 30,000 scores of the great composers of history, so, you know, Mozart, Bach, Beethoven. What Ivor looks in those scores is for patterns in the melody, in the rhythm, in the harmony, and based on those patterns, it will be able to create a model of what music is supposed to sound like.
Let's go back to our orchestra bot, and he would have to understand the imperfection of his human colleagues. There are things like intonation and rhythm that can change with interpretation. He would have to match the human aspect so he wouldn't stick out. An orchestra might take more time one night on a fermata or a caesura, and a crescendo might be slower or louder. Our bot would have to take into consideration the ways a performance gels. Can it do this? What if a bot went rogue? What would that look like? Mr. Robot, stay in line. What if he decided there was a better Boeing? What if he decided to override the tempo change, the soloist, or the conductor? Maybe the conductor would have an off switch ready for such a mutiny.
Take, locate, exterminate.
It could be a curious addition to an orchestra. And orchestras need something to keep people curious. Come see a robot created by the CMU Robotics Department play with an orchestra. Tonight, the CMU Philharmonic, under the direction of Andres Cardenas, performs the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, performed by Andrew the Bot. Andrew was programmed by the Bill Gates Robotics Department under the tutelage of Maestro Cardenas for the last 3 years. The interpretation matches the performance Maestro Cardenas deems as the way he and his teacher Joseph Gingold consider ideal. It might be enticing at first. How soon will we tire of that novelty? Shall we even go down that road? How about let's not and say we did? Let's not forget we just had 2 years of remote culture. So maybe, as a planet, we're not eager to have that much more AI and performance art. It's time to give it a rest. Let's leave it to fantasy. Let's leave creativity to humans. Robots won't understand the connection with the audience. How could they? The excitement of live performance, the awareness of our ever-changing culture, the human connection, those are the reasons we go to live performance. As always, thanks for listening, and I hope you'll check the show notes at accelerandocast.com. Have a great week. I'll see you next time.